For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. This podcast is recorded and produced on the lands of the Djabal and Djerriwarr peoples. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, their elders past, present and emerging. This is the sixth episode in our series called Voice of the GP. My special guest today is Dr. Bailey Dunn from John Street Medical in Kingston, just south of Hobart. Bailey and her husband bought the practice at the end of 2019, just before the COVID-19 pandemic hit. Some would see that as bad timing, but Dr. Dunn and her team of GPs have turned adversity into an asset. By increasing the hours the practice operates, patients have more opportunities to book an appointment. By splitting shifts and reducing the hours each doctor works per day, burnout has been avoided. And by keeping appointments at a minimum of 15 minutes and using a mixed model of billing, not only is the practice keeping afloat, it's thriving financially and is in demand in an environment where GPs are hard to find. As a side note for people with a bent for baking, John Street Medical is also home to Dr. Nerman Knorr, a finalist in the most recent season of the Great Australian Bake Off, a fact Dr. Dunn is immensely proud of. Bailey Dunn is my special guest today. Of course, the one question nobody's asked you, and which I think is the most important, is how is it being in the same practice as a cult figure like Nerman Knorr?
Right?
He'd keep you fed, wouldn't he?
Oh, I'm so proud of Nerm. It's not very often in life, in fact, that you have the opportunity to just watch somebody do something brilliant and be celebrated for it. I mean, yeah. We go to weddings for the same reason. But actually attending the viewing of the season finale of The Great Australian Bake Off was just pure joy.
He did so well.
Worth celebrating.
We were totally Team Nerman the whole way through, so it was excellent. Anyway, on to other things. So you're Canadian originally. When did you come out to Australia?
So I studied medicine in Australia, much like, you know, a few thousand other Canadians every year. I applied to medical school in Canada. I didn't get a spot. I was probably more confident than I should have been. And it's very competitive in Canada. So I went to medical school in Queensland. I had every intention of going back to Canada when I had finished my studies. But again, it's completely cliche. I just fell in love with Australia. It was too hot. Queensland was far too hot. No, I was at Bond Uni on the Gold Coast. And it was, you know, I felt like I got a really good education. I just could not handle the heat. When it came time for internship, I was very happy to be matched to a hospital in Tasmania.
Which bit of Canada are you from?
I'm from Alberta, northern Alberta. It's really famous for nothing.
Flat. Very flat.
Flat and cold.
The Gold Coast would be a little warm. Were you always heading for medicine? Was that what you wanted to do as a little kid? Or
I had always known I was interested in medicine. Mm-hmm. I was sort of the, you know, little weirdo watching medical things on TV instead of cartoons. I think like many people, I probably had imposter syndrome from quite a young age and thought, you know, I'm probably not as good a student as I needed to be. And it was too long a journey, etc. I grew up in the 80s when it wasn't necessarily encouraged for women to pursue STEM. So I actually originally did a dual degree in speech pathology and audiology. I liked healthcare. I thought an allied health degree would suit me fine. And then I went on to do a master's in public health with a focus in international health studies. And I really enjoyed that. I spent some time working in West Africa and really enjoyed sort of policy development and how we can adapt programs for communities. Yep. But honestly, the entire time I was always really drawn to the blood and guts of medicine and sort of the chaos and, you know, providing a solution to some chaos. Eventually I decided, oh, Bailey, just do it. Just go to medical school. So I was a sort of a non-traditional student.
How was the Australian medical school experience for you? Did you find it stressful? I know there's a lot of med students out there who battle hard to get through.
I didn't. I mean, I always say that I don't necessarily think medicine as a topic is difficult. I think it's an enormous obligation of time. So if you're willing to, you know, miss weddings of friends and loved ones, if you know that you're probably not going to get to travel because you're on a tight budget for 5 years, then maybe medicine is for you. It's an enormous sacrifice. And I don't think that ends once you graduate.
When you moved to Tasmania, was it to buy the practice that you're in now?
Or
was
not it at all. No, I had moved to Tasmania simply to complete my internship. And I, at that point, I still had the strong desire to go back to Canada. I thought, I'll just do my internship and then I'll go back. And then this magical little island just got me. So at that point, I convinced my then boyfriend, now husband at the time, I said, you need to move to Northwest Tasmania. It's beautiful. I did not provide full transparency that there were also no jobs outside of healthcare. And he works in civil engineering, but actually spent about 18 months working as a barista in Northwest Tasmania because that's
What just, the work was, yeah.
Yeah, there weren't any major infrastructure projects going on. So we both really fell in love with Tasmania that year and decided to stay. So then I completed my GP training through GP Training Tasmania.
And so when did you buy into the practice? Was that just before COVID or?
It was, yeah.
Good timing?
Fantastic timing, right? So I was finishing my GP training. I was doing my final term as a registrar at John Street Medical. And honestly, I wasn't even certain general practice was for me until that term because I found it to be quite isolating.
I've had people say that to me before. You'd think you're in a practice with a bunch of other doctors and nurses and all of the patients, and yet it's isolating, isn't it?
I found I get a lot out of social interaction with colleagues. Mm-hmm. And so I found general practice as a college to be quite isolating. And then I started working at John Street, which perhaps because it had already been around for 52 years, had this really close-knit, warm, fantastic group of doctors. And it was a really safe space to find my groove in general practice and carve out, you know, what care I want to provide. And it felt like a really safe space. And it sort of made me think of what general practice should be, that small family-based comprehensive care where people, I'll try not to use bad language, where people actually give a darn about what they're doing and they're not so burnt out that they forgot what it's like to care.
Let's talk about the burnout thing, because one of the reasons you've been talking in the media quite a bit lately is some burnout strategies that you introduced, or burnout prevention strategies. Why did you feel the need to do that? Were you seeing signs of trouble ahead?
I mean, I think I could identify that I was burning out pretty quickly. We bought the practice, the brief sort of history, the previous owners were ready to retire. They had been, I mean, they were well past retirement age and were, you know, really deserved their retirement and didn't want to sell to a corporate. And so they approached all of us doctors at the practice, and I had never owned anything more than a houseplant in my whole life. But when I really thought about it, you know, after a few months, thought maybe we can make this work. So my husband and I bought it in 2019 and really quickly identified that, one, we're not making enough money to support the changes that we need to implement to modernize this practice. And two, COVID's happening and we're noticing that people are really tired. They're tired of all these ongoing policy changes happening that you have to stay up to speed regularly with a disease we don't know much about. Everyone in our practice, most doctors have young kids, and that adds to, I'm sorry to call children a burden, but I've got two of them. It adds to this responsibility that you carry. So my impression was one small thing would happen and it would make people feel like they're exhausted, that what they need is a day off work. I totally understand that. But when you're trying to run a business, that actually becomes impossible, especially in a specialty like general practice where the margins are quite low. So the burnout prevention was born out of necessity. We called it BOP, burnout prevention. I know burnout is one word, but burnout prevention, spelling works. BOP, just made it an easy term to refer to. And it was based on a few principles. One being, how can we protect the health of our staff? Because calling in sick is a symptom of something else going on. If doctors are calling in sick this often, we need to address what's happening. So why are people feeling either that they're not well supported or they're just too tired to come into work? Two, we wanted to increase accessibility to appointments. People were scared. They were told to see their GP if they had any symptoms at that point in time. Testing wasn't readily available at the beginning of COVID. So we had this dangerous combination of fewer doctors, increased patient demand, less access to services, and at that point in time, didn't have community services set up to handle this huge wave of patients. So then I thought, can we reinvent the wheel as far as how we work? So I'm a night owl. I'm not an early bird. And I thought, wouldn't it be brilliant if I had a few hours in the morning to feel like I'm on top of my life. Can we rearrange a work roster? So that's one of the principles of BOP is changing the way we work. We increased our hours of operation. It meant hiring a lot more staff, but we open at 7:30 in the morning and close at 7 p.m.
So that gives patients the opportunity to come before and after work.
Exactly. So they were thrilled with that option. And doctors doing these BOP shifts either do BOP morning or BOP evening. So 7:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. is the morning BOP. 1:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. is the evening BOP.
Cool.
So now I get up in the morning, I take the kids to school and daycare, and I go for a swim, I pick up some groceries, I do whatever I want for a few hours, I get time to sit in a cafe and get caught up on emails, and then I get to go to work. And I'm only there 5.5 hours, and I don't feel like I'm there so long, I start to resent it. With BOP, I'm not at that stage anymore where the really complicated patient comes in and I have that heart sink feeling, because I haven't been there long enough to get that feeling yet.
Yes. I'm chatting today with Dr. Bailey Dunn, a GP and co-owner of John Street Medical in Tasmania. If you're enjoying our Voice of the GP series, you can find the other episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts. To subscribe to future episodes, just search for Medical Journal of Australia on your favourite podcast platform and hit the magic button. Back to our chat. But does it mean you can give your patients more time?
So and this is something I feel very strongly about, we've all been that patient where we feel like the doctor's got one hand on the doorknob while you're trying to explain your problem. So we refuse to shorten appointments. So patients can either book a 15 or a 30-minute appointment. There are no 10-minute appointments. There are no shorter appointments than 15
Fantastic.
Minutes for that reason, because we really want our patients to know that we are listening. A lot of it is about patient education. On the website, it says, if you have more than one issue, please book a double. You're only charged for the time that is used. It has required a lot of patient education. I think it's been worth it.
Did you have to bring on more doctors to cover
Yes.
twice as many shifts, I guess?
Yeah, so
it?
Twice as many doctors.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, that was really hard. GPs are quite a nomadic
Yes.
group.
Yes.
And in Tasmania, they can get a job anywhere.
Yeah.
We're woefully short of doctors in Tasmania. So fortunately, that probably took, I'd say, a year. Mm. And then word got out that we were doing something a little bit different to other practices. And so now we have this really young group of doctors. They've probably all fellowed within 10 years, and all of them have families, and it suits them. So
Perfect.
in the past 2 weeks, we've had 7 doctors call to work at the practice. And just for this week, I will have to say, no, I'm sorry, we can't,
yeah.
which is just this unbelievable problem to have in general
yeah,
practice.
Sure.
So I would love to see more independently owned practices. And I would love to see more women in leadership roles. And I think to do that, we have to reinvent the wheel. So I'm happy that this is happening. Hope more practices take on these BOP strategies.
And how has it been for the bottom line? Are you afloat?
Oh, it's been fantastic. So we would typically, in a week, when we bought the practice, we had 120 hours of available appointments. With a new calendar, we have 200. So last year, we had 50,000 patient appointments. And considering
Wow.
we actually only have 5 rooms in our practice, it's that's amazing.
I mean, you're as aware as any GP in the country of the difficulties that general practice is having.
Yeah.
You know, lots of talk about the remuneration being the worst in the profession. Practices having to stop bulk billing and have mixed model or no bulk billing at all. Could your model work in a corporate, or does it take an independent practice to make it work?
I think it could be adopted in a corporate. I would suggest the only thing stopping it is that, unfortunately, because of the bottom line, a lot of corporates, and at least the ones in Tasmania, have become 10-minute medicine. I don't think that's great medicine. I think that is a necessity to pay the bills. And so I don't think that model is going to attract staff that want to be there. And it's certainly not going to attract patients who want to pay to be there. If you're getting a mediocre service, you'll pay a mediocre fee. So our fees are in line with other practices. I feel strongly, maybe it's because of my socialist Canadian healthcare upbringing, I feel strongly that people who can't afford healthcare should have access to the same services as those
Yes.
who can afford it. So
yes,
we have to privately bill some patients, but we still bulk bill kids under 14 and
Yep.
concession healthcare card holders over 70.
Right.
And I don't want to change that. I really want And as long as we can afford to do that, we will. It means when we bought the practice, approximately 70 to 75% of the cohort was being bulk billed. And sadly, that's no longer sustainable. Fully, we have found this middle ground. There's no reason it couldn't be adopted by other practices.
You talked about women in leadership. Does it make a difference having a woman leading a practice?
I think it makes a difference having a parent lead a practice.
There you go. There you go. Yes.
So
because you have motivation to make things different. Yeah.
Right. And I think it's that expression that if you want something done, ask a busy person.
Yes.
And something happens when you have kids that every ounce of your spare time is eaten up. So you need to be decisive and make effective change when needed and stick to it because you don't have time to wax and wane and flip-flop about decisions. So I don't know. I'm a raging feminist, so of course I think it's wise to have a woman in leadership. But yeah. I think ultimately you want a busy person and you want somebody who, you know, has probably been through the system as a patient. I think that adds tremendous insight. I grossly underestimated the amount of hours that go into running a practice. It's just, it is truly every ounce of energy and spare time goes into it. And I think you do it because it's something you're passionate about. I feel really strongly that we have something special. When I'm there in the practice, it's humming. There's this wonderful vibe. And how do you can't quantify vibe, can you? But we were recently visited by the CFO of RACGP, and we were talking about the vibe. And he said the same thing. That's really hard to put a dollar value on it, but you know it when you feel it.
Exactly.
That there's laughter in the practice. NIRM has made beautiful cakes that day and brought them in. People want to be there, and that impacts. I don't know how you quantify that, but that does impact patient care. Valued and listened to. That matters.
Is there anything else you guys are doing?
Well, we really try to encourage doctors to incorporate restorative activities in their week. For example, I was previously working 8:30 to 5. Now I'm working the afternoons. It's my responsibility to make sure that I'm using that time for me. And so me going for a swim and then sitting in a cafe doing emails is actually really restorative. Then I get to use the end of my day to relax and make tea. And so we really try to encourage that implementation of restorative activities. You can't force people to do it. But honestly, the main difference I'd say in making sure that BOP works as a strategy is the right people. So we're quite lucky in that we found it really difficult to recruit a practice manager. Mm-hmm. And that's not specific to us. That's everywhere in Tasmania right now. So we actually split the job up. We have an office manager. She didn't have any experience in practice management at all, but she's an extremely capable people person and a really great communicator and just loves people. So she works as our office manager. She's the face of the practice. She does an orientation for every patient who calls and wants to be a new practice, sends them their policies, has a personal chat with them and tells them about our practice. She does all things rostering, scheduling, any concerns that a doctor or any staff member has goes to her. She's wonderful. And then the nuts and bolts of it, we use a remote practice management company in Melbourne. And so I had strong reservations about this and we decided to try it and it's been brilliant. Efficient that they can do in 4 hours what we'd be paying a practice manager to spend all week doing.
Give them a plug. What's their name?
My name is Hoxton. So we have one sort of remote practice manager, one contact at Hoxton. She's extremely communicative.
Yep.
And if she doesn't know the answer to something, they've got an entire team who does know the answer. So it's been a huge load off my shoulders to have that really reliable team. Yes, it's probably slight over the year, it'll probably cost us, you know, $5,000 to $7,000 more than a practice manager. But I think that's a sound investment if you have someone who knows exactly what they're doing. And then we've got Kyra, our wonderful office manager, who keeps this practice ticking along and keeps people happy.
If you had a room of med students in front of you, what would you say to them in terms of what specialty they should pick?
Oh, goodness gracious. That's a big ask.
I
like the content of general practice. I like the science of it and the art of it. My strong suggestion for anyone going into medicine is actually to determine the lifestyle that you want. If that can be achieved in a particular specialty, then you should take it and run with it. I think life's pretty short. So you really need to prioritize what sort of life and family, if you want to have a family, where you want to live.
And how happy you want to be.
Absolutely.
What I like about what you've done is you've not hung around for the government to pull its finger out and fix it. You've just gone, this is what we need to do, and we're just going to do this and give
Absolutely.
It a go.
I don't think I can ever sit around and wait for the government to do
There's
something.
That socialist Canadian healthcare system coming out again.
Absolutely.
Do you get to go back at all? Or?
I'm really lucky. So I actually work at the University of Tasmania when I'm not at the practice, and I manage global programs. Cool. So I get an opportunity to travel, and one of those spots that I get to travel back to is Canada. So it actually works really well.
Thanks for having a chat, and say hi to Noan. I'm such a fan.
I'm going to.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.